This episode of AVXL was recorded on May the 4th, 2017. Get your Star Wars on, people. We're going to be talking about some of the classic movies that inspired some of the most important scenes in the Star Wars series. I'm going to be talking about my minor obsession with the mini DSP. Harren, oh my goodness, Harren is excited that Vizio is Vizio again and bringing the TV love. An incredibly bright projector, a $500 TV pick. And let's talk about the three primaries and how to make your room sound better, because it's not just the speakers. It's what you do with the room the speakers are put in. And oh my goodness, you're going to love this one.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content. No matter what your budget is, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Harris.
And we are back. Sorry about April.
Yeah, you know, April sucks. Taxes.
Yeah.
And pain and suffering.
Which was related to taxes and other things.
Yeah.
But we're going to step beyond that and rededicate ourselves to recording on Thursdays and getting this out to you for everyone by Saturday. But I want to give a shout out to our patrons who are so gracious. We didn't charge our patrons in April because we didn't post anything. We think that's fair. But we're going to charge you in May because we like to make money. And
we want to do it.
Yeah, well,
do it better.
And yeah, we're just going to do it better. With that, may the 4th be with you. I really got to say, I enjoyed Alan Tudyk's K2SO in Rogue One.
Those words, I know Alan. Or, I mean, I know of him, but the rest of those words mean,
you know, the pilot.
I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
I'll just stop speaking there.
Is there some, the new Star Wars movie?
I'll loan you the Blu-ray.
That I have not seen.
It's very nice.
Maybe May the 4th is a good day for me to finally catch up.
You know, there's an article we'll put in the show notes. I'm sure it was syndicated. It showed up in SF Gate, the local newspaper. But it's 11 movies that inspired the Star Wars franchise. And it is a great way to get introduced to a bunch of classic movies. And to understand how they, in some cases, shot by shot, impacted some classics. You know, if you consider Star Wars a classic. If you don't, this will be less interesting. But the list of 11 movies by Katie Dowd, who I guess actually does work for the San Francisco Chronicle. Yeah, she's a producer for sfgate.com. I apologize, Katie, for not recognizing your name. It's really cool, though, right? Because it starts with The Hidden Fortress, which is a 1958 Akira Kurosawa film. If you haven't seen Akira Kurosawa's work, man,
go soak it in.
Go soak. Yeah, it is so inspirational to so many films that came after it.
And if you have a good calibrated picture setup, something about black and white mm-hmm. just really looks right on
yes.
a good setup on a TV.
I was just watching
or projector.
The Thin Man, the Third Man. And watching, you know, Orson Welles and Joseph Cotten play with each other's heads. I don't know how else to describe it. It's a brilliantly shot noir film. Has one of the best ad-libbed lines in all of cinema. And I'll just say it involves, you know what? Just watch the movie. It's worth your time. But something I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I don't know if it's, you know, over the last few years, my neighborhood has become much younger in the sense of a lot of people in their 70s and 80s have decided to sell their homes because the price of housing here in Northern California has gone beyond ridiculous. And
good retirement investment.
Yeah. You know, when the house you bought 40 years ago for $35,000 is now worth $900,000, I can see where you might be like, you know, Phoenix, it's warm. Who cares if they don't have water? But the result is that we have a lot more younger families that are, I think, consuming a lot more internet. And I bring that up because I've had more issues with compression artifacts and overly squeezed streaming video from Netflix, you know, Apple, you know, basically the Apple lineup. And it is just rededicating my just intense love of having Blu-rays of the films I love the most, because you never look up and watch a whole bunch of motion turn into a bunch of giant squares.
That's true.
When you're playing a Blu-ray.
For me, it's more with MLB TV. Mm-hmm. I watch a lot of streaming sports, and so it's not as hypercritical when the stream chokes a little bit. I don't mind it so much. But if I'm watching something cinematic where, you know, so much work's put into that presentation. Mm-hmm. And it's being streamed, and that streaming quality affects the presentation itself. Yeah. Yeah, you're definitely – it's almost, you're almost never seeing it in the best possible way with streaming services. Although
– color accuracy is problematic. Color saturation is problematic. Compression artifacts, your mileage is going to vary. If you're watching at 4 in the morning, probably not so much. If you're watching at 8 o'clock on a Friday or Saturday night, it's probably going to be the worst it can be, right? Because that's when everybody's online.
I also look at the work that the folks at Netflix do in terms of how they set their monitors up for when they look at content internally. And they've done a lot in the last year or two to ensure that their studio monitors that they look at for when they look at content for distribution, that it's as accurate as it can be. And that's incredibly important. And you tie that with their recompressing and their reanalyzing of their video content to make it look better overall. As long as they can continue to push that and to make it as good as it can be for the available bitrate, regardless of what you have, that's going to go a long way toward making those services more and more usable and competitive, mm-hmm. I think, with the folks like you and I who just appreciate epic image quality at the expense maybe of some convenience. In terms of, you know, I'll use a disc and it will look perfect and there will be no hiccups ever. And unless the player fries right. on me. But
if you want something that's even more convenient than a disc, you do what Robert's done and I'm in the process of doing, which is ripping your entire collection to a hard drive.
And I know do that for saying. my absolute favorites that I bought and collected. And I know I will watch again. I'm not just hoarding. There's just no reason. I mean, well, you can if you want. Drives are cheap. As someone who just built out a 50 terabyte NAS.
Oh my goodness. Well, it's amazing that, you know, you can get 8 terabyte Western Digital Reds, which are what our friend Alan over at PC Per kind of recommends for just about everything, not just for NAS boxes. If you're not going to run an SSD, it's like buy a Red. That way, if you want to use it in an SSD or in a NAS box later, you can. And, you know, a lot of they're quality drives. And by the 8 terabyte level from the Western Digital Reds, the 8 terabyte version, is using the Helium technology, which comes out of, you know, Hitachi and IBM and super big, expensive server drives. It is amazing stuff. So if you're thinking about and one 8 terabyte drive is about $10 less than 2 4 terabyte Red drives. So you have a better build quality and a couple pennies less per gigabyte. So yeah, actually, if you guys and gals, ladies and gentlemen, people, if y'all are interested in hearing us talking about encoding Blu-rays, what that process is, ripping and encoding, and then how you choose how to make it available to your playback devices, let us know. And that's ask@avxl.com is the place to reach us, or at Robert Heron or at Patrick Norton on the Twitter.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Or at AVXL on the Twitter.
Make MKV. There's a shortcut goodness. For you.
And the other thing is if you're,
to get you started.
Maybe. Yeah, it's a whole other conversation. I've been playing around with the Mini DSP, which is, Mini DSP makes a whole bunch of boxes, not to get all technical on y'all, but they do everything from Dirac Live, which is their room correction tool. But the product, the idea is that you're going to use a microphone and listen to what's going on in the room and then digitally correct it. There are arguments about whether or not that's actually possible or a good idea, but we won't get into that right now. Because what they do have that's pretty amazing is their Mini DSP in a box. The Mini DSP 2x4, which has stereo inputs and then 4 outputs. And the idea is, in some cases, speaker designer use it. They use it in place of a crossover.
Ah. So would you be using something like this, say, from a mini jack out or something where you had the stereo channels but not a separate sub out, and you could use this then to create a subwoofer low effects?
That's exactly what I'm doing. Is I'm using it. I'm taking basically the signal out of the preamp or out of the device that
your
I'm using.
Your source.
I'm taking basically splitting the signal out of my source. That would normally, instead of going straight into the amplifier, it's going from the source to the Mini DSP, and the Mini DSP. Two of those channels are going to go to the left and right, are going to go to the amplifier, and two of those channels are going to go to the subwoofer. Because when you start, there's a lot of modern subwoofers. subwoofers that actually don't have built-in the ability. Like a lot of subwoofers, they have the ability, you just run the speaker cables from your amplifier to the subwoofer and then from the subwoofer to your speakers. And a lot, I'm seeing more, I don't know if a lot is the right phrase, but I'm seeing more subwoofers where they don't have those breakouts to run the signal from your amplifier. So you need an actual subwoofer input.
Got you.
And if you're running like an audiophile preamp instead of an AVR, there is no subwoofer input. So I'm like, okay. So I
need a box.
I need a box. and the you know, for those of you out there going like, no. DSPs are bad. And I'm like, I'm the guy that hates digital signal processing in his audio path. Probably.
I think there was a point where it was
atrocious.
Iffy. Yeah, at best.
And you know, Odyssey started to think change our minds. Their room correction stuff is pretty amazing. Their setup stuff. And then I was at Linkwit's lab, which is the guy was a HP engineer, has been designing speakers for decades, and Siegfried Linkwit's. And I heard his LX minis, and instead of doing a physical crossover, he does the crossovers with a mini DSP. And I'm like, you know what? These are amazing speakers. He's a world-class designer. If he can use a mini DSP, I can use a mini DSP.
So this thing's a standalone board?
Yeah, well, the one I bought,
the kit version. Integrated internally, so.
Yeah. Then normally, for $105, you get a box for $25 less, because I'm cheap.
Okay.
I just got a little breakout board, and then I'll steal some of the children's Legos and build a box around it when I need to. But Mini DSP is the website, and if you have any questions about that, I'll talk about what I did and kind of how it worked in next week's episode. But, man, Vizio is Vizio again.
Weird news there, apparently.
Leico crashed and burned in the U.S. I don't mean to sound less than gracious, but everything I've read about
that. I see their products still being sold online and everything, so it's not like Leico's gone, but it appears that deal they had struck with acquiring Vizio has been backed out of in its entirety at this point.
Yeah.
And Vizio's back, at being Vizio again. This week they are launching, they did launch their new, I think the P and the M series, I want to say. Brand
Sounds
new.
About right.
Updates for their 2017 models, or for the 2016 versions of those TVs, still 4K. Likely improvements in terms of brightness output and color accuracy and things like that. I will say on the P series, Vizio did a pretty good job with DCI color representation. So I imagine they've either found a way to bring that performance level to their less expensive lines like the M and maybe even the E eventually. But also I think it's their compatibility, just providing at least in certain cases per device compatibility for things like HDR10 and Dolby Vision, and that, and just the good value. And for me, it was the that tablet functionality, or having more of an IP style control system over the TV itself, where you're not constantly bringing up menus. I found that worked pretty damn well, actually, for doing calibration work on the sets, and they tune up fantastically. Actually, they do a pretty damn good calibration from the factory on the Vizio TVs for their more premium models, in that cinema preset. That's always a good place to start. They usually have a dark and a bright mode. That's just a difference in gamma. So the lower number tends to be brighter. Makes no sense, but there you go. It's exponential. All right. Anyway. But yeah. And I'm kind of looking forward to see. I'm looking forward to see what's significantly different in terms of what they were doing last year versus this year. If they can maintain that epic value, especially in the light of competitors like Hisense, TCL, and others that are coming on strong with their own.
Right.
This year will be the version we're going to see all of those other companies now stepping up with improved color performance, doing DCI color to match some of the very best TVs out there today. And the brightness war has kind of been pushed to the side. It's kind of ridiculous to think, it's nice to have a TV that can push, you know, say 2,000-3,000 nits out of the 10,000 nit spec. However, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I'm finding most content is not authored anywhere close to that. Most of the content you'll buy in ultra-high-def Blu-ray is going to be authored around, honestly, it seems well optimized for the OLEDs that are typically the 600-700 nit displays. And that I find is kind of interesting. It's very difficult for the average consumer to look at a Blu-ray, ultra-high-def Blu-ray, and go, oh, this was specifically authored on a monitor that the pro used that easily exceeded what I did or I have at home.
Right.
And my TV is going to do its best. Whereas I'm seeing a lot of these titles, instead of them pushing the limits of what the spec can do for a particular release, they are stepping it back, saying, oh, we're going to limit peak brightness to maybe 700 nits. And I'm also noticing all the TVs this year, too. Nobody's doing, and I think I've talked about this before, but none of these HDR TVs are actually being luminance accurate in terms of displaying the picture exactly as the signal is being delivered. So if the TV isn't capable of displaying 2,000 nits of detail, it wouldn't show a portion of that signal containing information in that. That's just simply not the case. All of these TVs are blending that brightest detail to be visible in some way on the screen, regardless of what the light output is. So
it's interesting stuff.
There is a lot of voodoo going on in the back end, and it makes these TVs look a lot more similar when placed side by side. It's really harder than to see differences, unless you're getting into extreme environments where it's like a pitch black room or a really bright environment. But I got to say, just overall, the 2017 stuff compared to last year is just across the board a step up for what we're paying and what we're getting. And it's, I think, pretty phenomenal. I if you had waited until 2017, you did all right. But I understand.
If you waited until 2018, you might have done better. Oh, man.
Hey, want to give a shout out to at FM Holti, who tweeted to us, just a heads up, at MBM Cray is seriously dropping knowledge in the Vizio P Series AVS forum right now. And if you're not familiar with that Twitter handle, at MBM Cray is Matthew McRae, the CTO and head of marketing at Vizio. And he was discussing kind of the future of the P Series in the official Vizio 2016-2017 P Series owners thread on the ever so awesome AVS forum. And if you've never been to the AVS forum, you should go there now, because some of our favorite people write there, and it is an incredible collection of humanity pushing everything forward on all fronts. But one of the link we got was like basically, you know, Mr. McRae saying, he says, Vizio is not announcing any future support for HLG or HDR 10 Plus. Why? First, we like to get a lot farther down the path of analysis and content souring before making such an announcement. We want to make sure we can deliver, and that is, it is actually a step up for our consumers. Second, HLG is mostly used in Europe where we don't sell displays, but we are working closely with some content sources here in the U.S. that may launch in the future to understand what future demand would look like. Third, for HDR 10 Plus, the standard is not yet finalized, so it's a bit premature. Remember, HDR 10 Plus is just a marketing name for the dynamic HDR 10 functionality. But there are several different versions being proposed into the spec. Most make sense. One is a bit of an outlier. We want that to settle down before we market something that doesn't exist in the market or reality.
That's pretty refreshing.
Yeah.
It's just, yes. It's the whole deal with everyone screaming about, oh, where is Dolby Vision support for ultra-high def Blu-ray?
And we basically saw three semi-proprietary, you know, high-definition or HDR, excuse me, high dynamic range specs dropped at CES this year, including one from Technicolor. Because, you know, what we really need is more HDR specs that nobody knows how to build to for hardware that doesn't exist yet, for everyone to get pissed off about not having support for yet, even though most people aren't watching on 4K TVs because they haven't bought them yet. But the outrage, it was palpable.
I think it's good for folks just to remember that all of these things are more for the folks on the back end who are making content. And that any of these ultra-high def TVs with good color and brightness capabilities are going to be able to take your sources of this content and do a very good job with it. If you're using something like a Roku with 4K, if you're doing something from Amazon or YouTube or Netflix, they've already taken care of what format's going to work with your TV or, you know, in terms of its HDR compatibility and capabilities. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just kind of nice to say, yeah, you know what? HLG looks interesting. HDR 10 Plus maybe should have been the way it was to begin with. Both of those look great. There's absolutely no content for either one available to anybody. And yeah, they'll get there when they get there. And, I kind of go back and look at what they did with just HDR 10.
Right.
And having that available for things like game consoles and adding per device support in as they said they would. And they actually did come through with that. So I have no problem with them taking the wait and see approach on this. It is such a, you know, jumbled mess of terms and technologies and stuff, all trying to achieve very similar results. And that's the less people can focus on that and more about just discovering their favorite content in arguably the best formats ever. That's more important to me.
There you have it.
Yeah.
Something that came out a few weeks ago, but we haven't had the chance to mention. If you are in the corner apartment with the glass walls in Miami or somewhere near the equator or somewhere just where you have too much sunshine and not enough brightness and you have pined for the glory of a projector, man, do we have the projector for you. Epson announced the Home Cinema 1450. I assume we have the projector for you. If brightness is your one of your primary criteria, it's a 3 LCD 1080p projector, 4,200 lumens.
Oh, yeah.
That's really, really
That's good light
bright.
Output.
Yes.
A couple of those pointed at the same screen might make for a good daytime display. With the right screen, too. I got to say, though, in my experience with most of these type of projectors, that claim in the 4,000 range or so, to get that level of brightness out of them, you're typically engaging a mode that's not that beautiful to look at. It's usually overly green, I find, on the Epson projectors. Sure, it can dump that kind of light out if you're just doing a presentation or something. It's super useful for that. But don't expect 4,000 nits or 4,000 lumens with a calibrated preset. So, however, I do love their 3 LCD technology in terms of just the ability to eliminate some previous artifacts related to single chip DLP. I believe most are still 3D systems too, arguably still the best.
Right.
And the color brightness. That's the biggest deal with any three chip projector, is that your luminance detail and your color detail are very similar in terms of their light output. Whereas with a single chip DLP projector, when it gets into color mixing, specifically the secondary colors that you can think of, it's actually having to mix two of those primaries that can't be displayed at the same time. So you lose a little something there. And, you know, it's still going to look pretty damn good. But that's another reason why I love the three chip designs, although they tend to not be the cheapest in terms of like a single chip projector. But
oh, man. I will say, as someone with a 2500 or a projector that's rated at 2500 lumens, and how brutally bright that is, you know, when it's dark out and the lights are out in the rest of the house, even, you know, in a cinema mode and tuned down, I can't imagine how bright whatever percentage of 4,000 lumens is.
I actually set one of these up in a commercial installation, similar to it. And the one thing I came across was that it really comes down to the screen if you're dealing with a bright room environment. It has to be either a light rejecting style or something that can bump the gain up a little bit. Projector in a bright room environment is difficult, and it just requires a light cannon. And although at this $1,500 price point for 4,000 lumens, stack a couple of those suckers, like I said. I don't know if they're designed for any kind of edge blending or other things, features like that you get on some business class projectors. But this one looks more for the, I don't know if this is considered a home theater projector or not, but a home cinema. It's part of their home cinema line. So, yeah. Looking good.
All right, let's change directions and get to a viewer question. Scott writes in, "I very much respect your opinion. I've been listening to your podcast, but I was truly hoping you had reviews somewhere of the ever-elusive $500 1080p or 4K TV. Could you give recommendations to the people who can't afford a $6,000 TV? Yes, Scott, we are here for you.
Always.
Oh, my goodness.
Always. Easy one. Screen size. Consider what screen size is best for you. If you can fit a bigger screen into that space, value it in there or figure it in. Know what size would be ideal for what you're trying to do, be it a wall mount or just to put it on a piece of furniture or whatever. As far as the features built into TVs, I have come to the opinion that apps built into TVs generally suck, except for a couple of special edge cases like the Roku TVs. And I'm finding actually the Android TVs do a little bit better job of keeping things updated. I find the built-in apps on even the most premium TVs, most of the premium TVs I come across, just age poorly. And it becomes just something I end up ignoring. If you're looking at value TVs and you notice there's only one or two HDMI ports on the poor thing, you'll probably need more. There are very affordable HDMI switches out there. Just add one in. There are many great brands to consider. We've mentioned a few. I think the Vizio E-Series might be one to consider. Hisense is one of my favorite brands for value TVs and quality.
They're doing good stuff right now.
TCL, I have a 48-inch I put in my mom's room, one of those Roku TVs that was a terrific value, still trucking along. However, I will say my favorite $500 TV would be a projector. If you don't already have a TV and you need a TV, chances are you want to get that first. But consider a good $500 projector. I was looking at Optoma's HD 142X, 3,000 lumens, single chip DLP projector, $550. And this is that kind of price point where I'm not scared to take it outside for an impromptu session in the backyard. It has built-in speakers, so I don't have to worry about finding, you know, some way to listen. And it's got ample brightness and simplicity in terms of just being able to plop it down and set it up. You can get a portable screen. You can point it at a wall. Do whatever. It's just one of those viewing experiences where I don't think most people have really even appreciated 1080p resolution until it's large enough to really soak in those pixels. About a 6 foot across screen, would that be like a 90-inch screen or so?
Yeah.
That's really where you start to appreciate the detail in that format, let alone moving up to 4K and beyond. So
I always laugh because about once every 6 months in the last couple of years, somebody's been like, well, you can't really have a 100 or 120-inch projector screen without 4K. And I'd be like, well, I've had it for a decade now. Yeah, 4K is nice.
120 is getting up there.
I've never, at 100, 110 inches, I've never once looked at a screen with 1080p content and gone, gosh, I can see those pixels distinctly and they irritate the snot out of me.
Totally.
Upscaled SD content drive you nuts.
And also, if you're a fan of 3D, projectors probably are the best displays. Mm-hmm. If you are still looking for a great 3D TV, the only one I would even point you to at this point might be last year's C model from LG and their OLED. That 4K curved one. Might be the best 3D TV ever, but that's such an edge case. I'll leave that one alone. But yeah, consider a projector. And that Optoma HD 142X is well rated. Lots of positive reviews for it. And just simple. You plug anything into it. I kind of like the LG projectors that have built in like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and stuff for streaming apps and things like that. But again, with any of these projectors, they usually, in this case for the Optoma, they do have two HDMI ports, including one that's MHL enabled, as well as, I want to say, a USB port that you can often then use to power a device like a Fire TV stick or a Chromecast or whatever you want to plug into this thing. So it's just one of those display systems that I think people should not overlook. But otherwise, there are lots of great options out there for affordable TVs. If it's a hassle, I'm just trying to think if there's another way to save some cash. Usually I like shopping online if you can get free shipping. That way you don't have to just save you that hassle of getting
just
it to you.
Double check the return policy.
Most places it's going to be 30 days for a local store. And beyond that, they'll make you deal with the manufacturer. If you bought it with a credit card, they typically will add another year to whatever the warranty is. So you might not even want to bother with an extended warranty. I typically won't buy extended warranties on TVs. I just skip it. I'd rather just make sure it's taken care of, mounted right, protected. And if it fails in that first 30 days, so be it. I'll exchange it. Or in that year, I'll deal with the manufacturer. But it's whatever your comfort level is there. But anyway, we were talking about that bright Epson projector, and I think this is just another pick for literally a third the price. Optoma's making good stuff, and I'm so itching to see their 4K. Somebody was saying it was like under $3,000 for their new 4K projector coming out this year. So
that's a big deal.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's a big drop in price.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Before we drop to an interview, I got to talk to a few interesting folks. Got to talk to a lot of interesting folks down at Can Jam in L.A. a few weeks ago. Two of them that come to mind is Odyssey co-founder and CEO Sankar Thiagasambudram. And I think we'll drop his interview on the end of the show next week.
Oh, cool.
Because it was amazing to talk to him about, because him and Mr. Speakers and Odyssey have done so much, and Hi-Fi Man have really pushed the boundaries on planar magnetics. And I think Mr. Speakers,
it's hard to say that name without smiling.
It's almost impossible to say. And you haven't even met the crew from Mr. Speakers yet. Their new Aeon headphone, which I would have to listen to a lot of high quality stuff for a long time to really nail the difference between the Aeon closed back headphone that they just started selling for $800 in April versus the Ether-C Flow, which sells for $1,800. And for those of you who are having heart palpitations with the idea of an $800 headphone, much less an $1,800 headphone, this is extraordinary performance for the price.
Nice.
And the crew at Odyssey have been doing some incredible things where they've been taking planar magnetic, and first they shrank them down to the sign on ears, which I never thought I'd see, and then shrank them again to the iSign in-ear planar magnetics, which are goofy but sound really spectacular if they fit your ears properly. Well, it's I'll let Sankar explain why their design process is fascinating and how they evolve products, but. What I did want to talk about is I had a chance to sit down with Jason Lord, who is a singular character and a pretty talented engineer. He's the founder of the Source AV Design Group down in Torrance, California. This place I was talking about where they had all the amazing home theater demos set up.
You got to get in there a day early.
And, oh my goodness. all the Focal speakers, all the projectors.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm even willing to... It's pretty crazy. But he sat down, his background is he has a, engineering degree from MIT. He's been doing the home theater room design. We talk about his background in the audio in the interview. But I asked him about room tuning, right? And how to make a room sound better. And we ended up really getting into what to me at least was an interesting discussion about the three primaries, reflection, diffusion, absorption, what impacts your sound or what screws up your sound, what you need to fix first, and how to make your speakers, whether you're talking about a stereo speaker installation where you're getting your audiophile geek on, or a home theater installation where you're getting your surround sound geek on, but how to, look at your room and identify problems and fix them, including, I will say, some things I did not know about the differences between like natural fabric curtains, like cotton and wool, versus curtains made with artificial fabrics and how they do or do not impact the propagation of sound waves.
Slappy.
So
slappy.
And I want to thank Mr. Lord for taking the time to sit down with me to talk about that. And if you're in the Torrance area, if you're in LA, check out the Source AV. If you're looking for a home theater or if you're looking for serious headphones, he has more high-end headphones in stock and available to demo than anywhere I've ever seen in my life.
Good.
I will send you guys a picture of that.
You can. Lovers.
And that's thesourceav.com. And hey, do us a favor. If you enjoy the show, please go to patreon.com/avxl. We love your support. We can't do this without you. And we're trying to grow our revenue so we can spend a little bit more time and do some more content for you. And if you have things that you're thinking like, I'd pay an extra dollar a month for this, let us know what this is and we'll see if we can do that for you. That's patreon.com/avxl. You can find Robert Heron's primary gig at the ever so awesome heronfidelity.com. And I'm usually at avxl, although rumor has it there may be something called Righteous Audio springing up in the
Righteous Audio
distant future. We'll see.
Nice.
Just what I need in my life, a blog about audio. Oh, my goodness. It's got to go somewhere.
It must.
Because it's going to drive people on tech thing nuts if I talk too much about speakers and headphones.
It must.
Oh, my goodness. Axe@avxl.com. Ask@avxl.com is the email address. We want your questions. We want to know what you're watching. Number one thing you're watching this week.
I received that Planet Earth 2 Ultra High Def Blu-ray, and there's some technical things about it that I'm curious about, so I want to go through that. MLB baseball season is in full effect. I am thankful for the folks at Unlocator.com for helping me avoid stupid blackouts.
Stupid blackouts.
Stupid blackouts. If you're an Archer fan, seasons 1-7 are on Netflix right now, and season 8 just started, and it's called Dreamland. And he basically went into a coma last season. So this is all in his head. And it's just, if you were a fan of the original three seasons, you will love season.
Spoiler.
Yeah, well,
I can't really watch Archer with the kids in the room.
Oh, no. Oh, no. There is too much explaining to be had. However, seasons 1 through 7 are on Netflix right now, and it is an awful fun ride, especially those first three seasons. And if you were a fan of that kind of stuff, season 7, I would recommend. And season 8 is currently streaming for everyone for free, if you're willing to just click your brains out on the FX website. So if you'd like a little streaming experience, and if you happen to have a cable provider you can click on, or whatever that login information is, it will reduce the number of commercials you will be exposed to, and the less the timeout hassles related to, at least they put that content online and make it available somehow. So I am thankful for that before it comes to Netflix. And other than that, this weekend I have a huge camera installation project. Doing replacing an old analog security cam system with 2 dozen IP 1080p cameras. So if anybody's interested in that, I wouldn't mind doing a little overview of what I did, why I selected what I selected, some of the software on the back end I deal with, and the whys and the wherefores of product selection there. And there's a lot to it, and I'm kind of having fun with it. It's something I help manage for a club I help work with, and
they're good people.
If you want to know where I'll be this Sunday, standing on ladders with my DeWalt drill in hand, cutting holes in everything, pulling lots of Cat 6 and 5. And
don't forget to caulk the holes.
I will. I also have plenty of cable terminators. I'll be terminating a lot of Ethernet.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
American Gods came out on Stars. Oh. I am actually paying for a Stars subscription through Amazon Prime. Just so I can watch it. If you're not familiar with it, it's a novel by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, and, cool.
It's been turned into a television series.
Oh, that's right. I knew that name was familiar.
Oh, my goodness. yeah. If you're an Ian McShane fan, and really, who isn't, it's worth it just to watch that. If you're a fan of the novel, I think it's holding up to the promise of the novel. And that is American Gods. And something I completely missed last summer was The Get Down, which was like a 6-episode series that came out on Netflix. Basically, it's Baz Luhrmann's take on the origins of hip-hop in the South Bronx.
Huh.
And it's Baz Luhrmann, so it's nutty and it's over the top. But it's also amazing. And that's The Get Down. They just released the second season, or I should say the second part, that finishes the first season. They just released that in April, and that's on Netflix.
Oh, moment of silence. My grandfathered Netflix plan has expired, and now I'm paying full price.
Oh,
well, hey, I think they've also bumped it up so I can have like 4 simultaneous quad HD streams. So
that's a lot of quad HD streams.
Yeah, a lot going on. So, many times I have at least a couple TVs running simultaneously looking at stuff. But
oh, my goodness. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back in studio Thursday, April 11th. Hopefully I did the math right on that one. And thank you so much for listening. Please tell your friends about it. Go to avxl.com. Go to avxl.com, but really go to patreon.com/avxl. And stay tuned, because we're going to have Jason Lohr from the Source AV Design Group and I talking about room tuning and the three primaries.
And I think I have Samsung's very best TV for 2017 almost in my grip. Soon. I haven't seen it in the wild.
Is there going to be a truck coming up to the loading dock here?
Nah, I think they're going to have to fly me to secret locations and work on it in special dark rooms.
That's so ninja.
I tell you. They're so secretive.
They are.
But they have good audio people, too, and I always love hanging out with them on top of the video, folks. Anyway, more good pixels. Lots of, you know what? Everyone's got the new 2017 TVs right now, I've noticed. A lot of people some are considering those 2016 models. I got to say, especially on the OLED side, if you can swing a 2017, just do that. And we'll get into all that later. But lots of folks getting the new sets up, and they want them calibrated and looking great. And it's a great year already. It's looking good.
Send your questions, ask at avxl.com. With that, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
We'll see you next week on AVXL.